Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Over 3,600 men and women who work for the Securities and Exchange Commission, in my experience, are extraordinarily professional. I'm enormously proud of them. I'm very proud of the people who are doing the work right now on the Madoff case. I just can't emphasize enough how proud I am of our personnel, how strongly I wish to encourage them in doing their jobs. I am extraordinarily proud of the work that the SEC professionals are doing. We have very extraordinarily
professional people. This is Christopher Cox, the chairman of the SEC, the wolf who was guarding the chicken coop, who was covering not only for himself but for all of the deadbeats in the SEC. It gets worse. Listen to clip three when a reporter presses this jerk on a real answer and he doesn't get anything but PR from this fraudulent Harvard lunatic. Listen.
Does it give the SEC a black eye that this could have gone on for so long?
Law enforcement is at the heart of what the SEC does. It's why I have made enforcement a priority during my chairmanship, and it's why getting answers to these questions is so important. That's why I've asked for this review.
I don't hear the black eye answer, though. What do you think of that?
I'm sorry?
Does this give the agency a black eye that it could have gone on for so long?
The period of time during which information was reported to the SEC about Mr. Madoff is one of the reasons that I think it's
shut up.
That we
just
answers.
Shut up. Go directly to jail. I can't take it anymore. Why does a man like Christopher Cox get away with this? You know, the reporter should get a prize for at least trying. That's unheard of in the media today. That reporter tried to get something out of this Harvard liar, but he couldn't get anything out of him. This went on for over 10 years. Allegations were made against this Ganef, this crook, this criminal, this alleged Ganef crook criminal, this low-life thief who's walking the streets of New York. And by the way, let us say you're an inner-city mother listening to this show, and you're having trouble raising a kid, and your kid jumps a turnstile, and he is caught by a transit cop. That child will go to the Tombs, a desperately horrible prison in New York, for at least 30 days. So my headline on the Savage Nation is, jump a turnstile, go to jail, rob $50 billion, buy a judge, and stay home in your $7 million Park Avenue apartment. This is the Savage Nation. I want to open with something that I think you'll find controversial, and then you'll understand where I'm coming from. So before you jump, listen. When I was a schoolboy, wiseacres in the classroom used to joke like this. They used to say, Jesus saves, Moses invests. And people would snicker. Well, let me tell you, today, if Jesus had his money in a bank, he'd be earning 0% interest. Moses would be broke. But at least Jesus would still have his money. Now, the question is how long before this group at the SEC and the Treasury wipes out all of our savings in our banks by devaluing the U.S. dollar to near worthlessness through bailouts and loans to their insider friends. And by the way, how different is Hank Paulson from Bernie Madoff? Only time, Bernie Madoff, only time will tell us if there is a difference at all. There's another subtext to this, which is the big pregnant question that no one in the media has asked yet. And I hope that people listening to this show at CNBC and some of the other networks that actually do real reporting will get an answer to this question by tomorrow morning. Why is George Soros, the biggest hedge fund operator in the world, so far as I know, not been heard from? Has George Soros lost money during this downturn in the hedge fund markets, or has he made money? Is there any connection between Madoff and Soros? Were there any funds that were jointly owned or jointly shared? These questions are questions that need to be answered. And I'm asking the question. I've asked some legal experts, some financial experts. Nobody can get an answer about George Soros and how he is faring during this grave downturn in the hedge fund business. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. The question of the day is, quies custodiat ipsos custodes, which I've asked for months now. I first asked it on June 12th, 2008 on this show, The Savage Nation, when I said, quies custodiat ipsos custodes. And by the way, forgive me if my Latin is mangled. The fact of the matter is I know botanical Latin very well. I know Latin very imperfectly. But I do know what the Latin phrase quies custodiat ipsos custodes means. It comes from the Roman poet Juvenal, and it's been translated variously as, who watches the watchers? Who will guard the guards? Who shall watch the watchers themselves? The answer is nobody. Now, the fact of the matter is, modern democracies were set up in a system where there was a separation of powers. The idea was to never give ultimate power to any one group. And so we put the executive, the legislative, and the judicial to sort of vie with each other. Each of these branches of government have the interests of themselves and are competing and conflicting with the others. And the theory was that each group would then find in its best interest to impede the functioning of the rest, and this would ultimately keep power under constant struggle and thereby out of any one group's hands. This has all disappeared under Bush Clinton. After 16 years, there is almost no difference between the executive, legislative, and judicial. They are in the hands of a few people. Bernie Madoff was their money man. In my opinion, Bernie Madoff was the bag man for the entire power structure, which is why that piece of garbage was seen smirking in the streets of Manhattan today, walking as though he was a movie star. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. What are you going to do with your money? I open by saying, in my day, smart Alex in the school used to joke and say, Jesus saves, Moses invests. Well, let me tell you, today Moses would be broke if he had invested. Jesus would have no interest-bearing account, but at least he'd have his money. The question is, what's next? The Treasury has played its last card. They've reduced payments on interest in the T-bills to 0%. What is left for them to do? Well, we're going to talk about that to a great extent. I got an email today from a financial guru friend who said this to me. He said, in my opinion, there is no zero difference between the shysters. And he said, as to Moses and Jesus, they would both have had their money in biblically defined money, which are as clear as a bell: gold, silver, land, and cattle. Those are the only biblically based forms of money, all of which are physical, all of which have no counterparty risk, all of which require no trust in another man's word of honor or honesty. And he goes on, he talks about how evil men have manipulated the system, how they have continued to rape, pillage, and destroy a once great monetary system under the guise of saving that system. And he says there will be more victims and future generations of taxpayers that will have to pay for the mess these men are creating. Are you aware that this gang of thieves has tripled the balance sheet at the Fed with a stroke of a pen? Are you aware that in July of 07, the Fed balance sheet was at $850 billion, and today it is at $2.2 trillion? He asks, how can you create $2 trillion of anything and have it maintain a value? The inflation, while not a problem now, given we are in a deflationary loop, he says will be unbelievable over the next decade, causing cost of living to explode. He said, we've seen this happen over the last 30 years. Do you remember houses in 1977? Remember before the big run-up? Houses that were $40,000 in 1977 went up to $700,000. A car that cost $4,995 in 1977 is now $49,995. Okay, he says it will be worse once all this newly so-called created money gains what is referred to as money velocity. What is money velocity? My friend says that is, it leaves the banks in the form of loans and goes into the system. The only reason inflation is not exploding now is that the money is sitting in the banks. Once the banks start to lend, which is what the Fed is begging them to do, the money goes into the system, it picks up velocity, and voila, we have inflation. He says that is why, while it may sound self-serving to some, gold is the only asset that is not someone else's liability, with no counterparty risk that you can hold, that you control and will offset the ravages of a higher cost of living. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back. Savage.
all taken a hit. Hospitals, universities and religious schools, senior centers, even human rights programs providing legal help to Guantanamo detainees. All relied on money from Jewish charities. All are now tallying their losses, figuring out how to survive the alleged Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme.
Now, we all heard that part of it, and we're all sympathetic to genuine charities that help people that are really needy. However, there is a silver lining in the Bernie Madoff meltdown. The good news is that some very extremist liberal charities are now completely bankrupt, and I'm going to list a few of them for you. See, there's a silver lining in every cloud. And sure, you want money to go to the real needy in hospitals and universities, although how much of it actually gets to the needy is another question. You know, how much is taken by the gangsters who run these charities is a story unto itself. But let's focus on the fact that some extremist liberal charities were living off money coming into them from Madoff, indirectly. In my opinion, one of them is a group called JEHT Foundation. And you're going to find out in a minute who they were. The group is called JEHT, and they say they're involved in end-of-life issues. Really, what does that mean? What's end-of-life issues? Well, according to Elizabeth Semmel, director of the Death Penalty Clinic, don't you love the word clinic? Libs are big on using the word clinic. At UC Berkeley's Bolt Hall School of Shame, JET is short for Justice, Equality, Human Dignity, and Tolerance. Now, when I hear the word human dignity and I hear the word tolerance together, I reach for my Glock because I know they're coming from my freedom of speech. Usually the words equality, human dignity, and tolerance, when they are linked together, they usually mean they want to take away your equality, your human dignity, and your tolerance. And so this group is no different. They work in the area of lethal injections. They don't like the fact that rapists and mass murderers are executed. And so these low-life pieces of garbage take money from charities such as those that funnel money through Bernie Madoff, and they run things called the Death Penalty Clinic at once great universities like UC Berkeley's Bolt Hall School of Shame. But the fact of the matter is, the group JEHT, short for Justice, Equality, Human Dignity, and Tolerance, works in the lethal injection area. And they were funded right to the max. Oh, they went to conferences all over the world. They probably went to The Hague. They met their girlfriends and their boyfriends and talked about how bad America was, how evil we were with the death penalty. But now that old Ganef Madoff and his alleged $50 billion securities fraud has hit these vermin, the fact of the matter is, I guess the death penalty clinic will have to stop worrying about mass murderers on death row and start worrying about making a living themselves. So there's a silver lining, you see, in everything. The director is John O'Toole, and he said it was our single largest contributor and one of the few organizations anywhere giving money for juvenile justice issues. That's another group relating to it, the National Center for Youth Law. You know what a youth is to these people? It could be 6'5", the youth, age 15, who smashes your mother's head in and rapes her, and they would defend him. That's youth law. Oakland's National Center for Youth Law, which had gone through its 8-month, $204,000 grant for 08, and only needed another $25,000 to close out the year. I guess they needed a holiday, and them. I know who they are. I don't like any of them. They're all worthless. Worthless! Here, David Steinhardt, I don't know him. I'm sure he's a wonderful person. David Steinhardt, director of the Juvenile Justice Program at some fraudulent group, in my opinion, called Commonweal? Common Weasel? What's Common Weasel? Well, I guess it's a philanthropy that does social policy. Common Weasel of Bolinas, California, had just finished up its 2-year, $200,000 grant. Ha, 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 ha. You just finished it up your nose, probably, in my opinion. What'd you do with the 200 grand? They say a new grant was in the hopper, but that's been dashed. He says it will definitely affect the work we do. It's always a challenge to find money for this kind of work. But the way this one went down, this one has an ugly feel to it, says David Steinhardt, director of the Juvenile Justice Program at Common Weasel in Bolinas, California. I wonder where that $200,000 two-year grant went, David. Would you like to disclose it to the Savage Nation? Would you like to do that? Call me at 1-800-449-8255. Tell us where the money went. So as I say, yeah, some people lost a lot of money, and there's a silver lining in it when you see that these left-wing fanatics are going to wind up having to work for the first time in their life. 1-800-449-8255. Why is Paulson, why is Cox, why are they still working in these jobs? Well, I'll give you an answer. Here's your answer. Bush goes to Iraq and stages a fake news conference to create a videotape for his library. A little closed room in which he says, oh, I am so glad to be in the newly liberated country of Iraq. I am so glad that Iraq and Afghanistan have been liberated because of my great work. Of course, the great work, the limbs, the eyes, the dead bodies that are strewn throughout Iraq and Afghanistan had nothing to do with it. It's Bush's legacy he's concerned about. So Bush goes there to create a false legacy on videotape for his library, L-I-E, Berry, which they all have now. I don't know where this originated, the libraries. I have no idea. They look like slush funds to me. Every president for quite a while now has a library. Who goes to these things? Why would you go to a library, the Clinton Library? Well, what's there that you need to see? Why would you go to any of these libraries? As I said, they look like slush funds. But anyway, putting that aside, so Bush goes to Iraq. He creates a false press conference that goes awry because the Secret Service agents are flat-footed and asleep at the switch. He almost gets hit in the head with two shoes. And now he wants you to believe that everything's fine in Iraq and fine in Afghanistan. It's going to be that way forever. So if you have no one at the helm to watch over the SEC, to watch over the Treasury Department, and since they're really not independent agencies, they really work for the president, we go back to the opening question in Latin. Qui est custodiat ipsos custodes, which is, who will watch the watchers? Who will guard the guardians? The answer is, when you have a democracy, there is a separation of powers, and each power watches the other. But when you move into what we have now, which is anything but a democracy, the answer is there's very little separation of powers, and nobody will watch the watchers. We the people have gotten screwed.
Savage.
I obviously have made a decision to make sure the economy doesn't collapse. I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system. And I'm sorry we're having
Wait, listen to this. Here's George Bush. I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market. That reminds me of the 60s when there was a song out called You Gotta Kill for Peace. Remember that one? You gotta kill, kill, kill for peace. Can you guys find that? That's a hard one to find. It's an obscure tune. No, it's a hard one. So I guess next we'll hear from Obama saying that I've abandoned the First Amendment in order to save the First Amendment. There'll be no free speech for the first 1 year of my administration. In order to save the First Amendment, we're going to abandon the First Amendment just for a short period of time. Or then we'll hear some of the other liberal, lying, fascist pigs say, these are extreme times and they require extreme measures. Mark my words. Mike is always right. Mike's always ahead of the curve. And as Panasonic used to be, you know, they were always slightly ahead of the curve, slightly ahead of their time. I hope I'm only slightly ahead of my time, but I don't think I'm too slightly ahead of my time here. I smell it from a mile away. I believe Obama will become a mini dictator faster than you could say Barack Hussein Obama. That's my opinion. I see it in the way he already conducted his first press conference the other day. When a reporter asked him a pointed question about Blago, and did his stooge, Rahm Emanuel, the sharp-elbowed Israeli, original Israeli, Rahm Emanuel, did he have anything to do with Blago and the appointment to the Senate? When Obama says, I don't want you to waste your question, Pat, next one. Well, the guy didn't waste his question. You wasted his question because you wouldn't answer it. To me, that looks like the managerial style we're going to get. Qui est custodiat ipsos custodes? The answer is, forget about it. That's all. Last night, just as a side note, because I drift around and there's only so much I want to talk about this madness here. I went to a North Beach restaurant, so my friend Lorenzo was there, and he introduced me to a fellow. I didn't really get to speak to him. He said, Michael, you got to hear the stories. You're a dog lover, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I gave him a copy of Psychological Nudity with Teddy on it, which he loves. He's a dog lover. He says, you got to hear the story. He says, my friend owns a big Italian restaurant in Rome, one of the biggest, one of the best. I said, so? He said he flew to San Francisco on, I think he said Monday. He had business here next weekend. He said Tuesday, he got to San Francisco. He got a call or an email from Rome that his dog was sick. So he flew back to Rome to be with his dog on Thursday. Yeah. And then he flew back to San Francisco on Friday. I said, oh, my God, that's really what kind of dog is it? I said, is it a show dog? He said, no, it's a mutt found in the streets of Rome. So I started to think about it. Why do so many men, and these are good people. These are not naive people. These are not weak-minded men. These are like strong kind of guys. Why do so many men love their dogs so much? And I think it comes back to what we're facing here in America today in a strange way. Remember I did a show about a year ago about little dogs becoming very, very popular amongst big men. Remember that one? You remember I talked about how come I see so many large guys, I mean big guys with little teeny dogs? And the answer is because women have become less than feminine, not vulnerable. They look hawkish with the lips. They look like hawkish to women. They look like vultures. Let's put it to you that way. Too many women took on the look with the operations of the faces and the Botox. They look like post-op transsexuals with the way they look today. They don't even want the bodies of a woman. They want to look like someone who had surgery and their private parts removed. We can go into the psychology of that in a minute, but I don't want to go down that road. And the women don't want the same kind of nurturing that a little dog wants, okay? Men have a paternal instinct, and men need to take this paternal instinct and use it in a positive way. And since men have fallen out of favor in this homosexualized, feminized world that we are living in, it's sad to say that many men are turning to dogs, particularly little dogs. That's one man's opinion. I know it's a little sidetracked from Bernie Madoff and, you know, all of that. We could talk about the other topics of the day. Here's another one. Kennedy says publicly she wants the Senate seat. Oh, well, give it to her. She's entitled to it. After all, she's done nothing. That just about qualifies her to be a senator. She's done nothing in politics. Let's see. She has a name that people might recognize. By the way, not all good. And so for that reason alone, she should be a senator. I got to tell you something. If I were a Latin guy or a black politician in New York, I'd be fuming. I'd say, what do you think I am, a lox? I'm not a human being. I've worked in the wards here of New York for 30 years, and you want to be senator because you got Kennedy's name and you've never been in politics? She says, I want to say, as some of you heard, I would be honored to be considered physician U.S. senator. Big deal. Why should you be senator? What have you done to qualify you? You want that moron governor to appoint you, that whack job who only knows to tax and spend? Here's a guy who taxes New York now. No one knows how this is going to ever play out other than to destroy the economy. And the nerve of this, he raises the budget by 1%, or I read $1.2 billion. You hear this? He didn't cut any programs. He increases the budget and taxes, tax and spend liberal. So, yeah, she's reaching out to the chief sausage there in Albany now to appoint her. I guess they can go to Charlie Rangel. Maybe he knows somebody from the Dominican Republic who may want to be a senator. It's unbelievable to me. Rangel, one tax scam after another, and he's still in office. Who is going to watch the watchers? Qui es custodia ipsos custodes? Forget about it. Love your dog. Mike says, love your dog and learn to love your pasta puttanesca. 1-800-449-8255. Yeah, that had a good name. Pasta puttanesca. Maybe we ought to put on a big feed for the politicians of America and serve them pasta puttanesca, which is prostitute spaghetti. I understand the origins of the puttanesca sauce occurred in the ancient days around the Roman Colosseum when the ladies of the night used to ply their trade outside the games. And they needed a hot, spicy sauce in order to attempt to kill some of the microorganisms that they were apparently spreading around by their practice. And so they put a sauce together for them. Very spicy. Red pepper, anchovies, lots of garlic, you name it. The spicier the sauce, well, I could stop right there. The saucier the, you fill in the blank. The spicier the saucier the blank. Or as they said when I was a kid, I can't even tell you half the things they said when I was a kid. I got to hold most of it back here on the radio show. That's why I'm thinking of Las Vegas. I got to let it all hang out. You know what I'm saying? It's time already to let it all hang out. You can only do so much on radio. Like with me, I got to hold back an awful lot, like about 0.1% of what I really want to say. play that song for me now. The da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. General Taylor song. I want to just hear that while I'm getting ready to get people to call me at 1 a.m.
He died on the plains of old Mexico. Carry him to his burying ground. Way hey,
I love this song. It's another burial song. I'm in a very morbid mood lately. Like we're burying our democracy day by day, carrying it to the ground. A shroud of the finest silk will be made. Beautiful lyrics, simple, simple. All right, we got the picture already. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Are you drinking more, Dad? Not really. I didn't have any wine last night, strangely enough. Isn't it strange, as much as I drink some nights, I don't drink anything? Isn't that funny? I mean, you know, you say, I know what an alcoholic is, and I'm not. You know what an alcoholic is? Someone who can't stop drinking once they start. I was told this by alcoholics, that there are people who can drink and people who can't drink. They said, you're a lucky man, because after one or two drinks, I'll stop, period, every time, or I won't drink at all. They say if they take so much as one drink, they'll drink till they're in the gutter. They fall down. They don't have a feedback mechanism. I'm very lucky. I have like some kind of enzymatic, whatever. It comes back and says, it's enough, Mike. Can it? You know what I mean? 1-800-449-8255. McCain. McCain the shame. I have an article on talk about drinking. There's a guy who could use a drink. McCain, excuse me, could use a drink. I had a lot of coffee before the show. Excuse me. I wasn't going to really, but I feel much better now. You look at the, hey, how about this ad, this Walsh thing? I'm going to say something that may offend you or offend thee. If thy eye offend thee, pluck it out. This thing with America's Most Wanted, that guy Walsh, I was never, you know, one way or the other about him. I liked the show if I'd watch it once or twice a year. I thought it was fairly good. Then it got too glitzy. You know, I like seeing perps because the media hides them. And they hide them for obvious reasons. So I would watch it once in a while when I had nothing else to do. Now this thing, 20-some-odd years later, they find, oh, the mystery of his dead son is solved. And the guy seems to be getting publicity out of it. I don't know, there's something creepy about this. There's something creepy about Walsh, again, capitalizing on his dead son's memory, all right? Walsh family opens up a first time since Adam's murder solved. You don't get over it? Well, you know what? We got over it, sir. We wish you didn't talk about it anymore. Another, you know, another thespian that we can do without. You know what I'm saying or not? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Incidentally, again, michaelsavage.com has psychological nudity. I've been approached to sell it in bookstores, and it's not going to, I don't think it's going to be in bookstores. My beautiful hardcover book is only available there. And I told the fulfillment house I'm paying the extra shipping costs that are required so that you get it for Christmas. Period. I want you to have it. Again, I do want you to have it. Woodchuck Bill, Loved by the Sewer Plant. How come no one ever calls about the tough high school geometry teacher, two fingers on his right hand? That's a good story. Let me read you a couple of sentences while you call the show to get on about politics, because this is a nice story. I had a geometry teacher in Jamaica High School with only two fingers on his right hand. He was a tough guy. He was an Irishman, a real tough, but a very good teacher. The kind of teacher who made you come up to the blackboard and perform. If you didn't, he ridiculed you. He didn't curse you out, but he called you a dummy. As you stood there sweating, he might say, "Now what's the matter with you today? Is your brain not functioning?" That kind of thing. Believe me, you didn't want to wind up in front of that blackboard not knowing your stuff because you didn't want to be humiliated in front of your peers by this tough Irishman. Today, of course, they take any moron off the street. Any idiot who has one eye going up, one eye going down, one who can hardly speak, and they tell you he's smarter than you are. If you dare be smarter than him, you go to the back of the class. But in those days, it was very clear. If you were smart, you were smart. If you were stupid, you were dumb. And that was the end of it. No one changed anything. Anyway, this teacher had a left hand with five fingers and a right hand with two fingers. The two fingers were stubs. But he could still put chalk to the board. When he said to you, "The midterm exams are back," He would read out every name and every score in the class publicly. Now, why do you think the teacher did it? Because he understood that by doing well, you were proud of yourself, and the other kids looked up to you. And by doing poorly, you would be ashamed of yourself, and you would try to do better. But now, because the liberal nuts have taken over the educational system, where they try to put perversion ahead of everything else, they have now taken dummies and try to make them better than the smarties. Consequently, the schools can't even teach Johnny how to add or read. And if Johnny isn't smart enough and he can't focus at all, whoa, they put him on Ritalin to dope him up and turn him into a sissy and a dumbbell who can't do anything except sit in a cubicle for the rest of his life and possibly jump off a building at NYU when he's 25. Now, how Mr. W lost his fingers is another interesting story. We all heard the rumors. It was whispered in the halls of the high school that he lost his fingers, and I'm not glorifying it, planting a bomb for the IRA. Now, I don't know whether it was true, but it was certainly enough to make us understand not to mess around with this teacher, and we didn't. We respected him. Whether it was true or not is irrelevant. That's whom we had for teachers in those days, men like him and many other tough men, most of them vets from World War II, and they knew how to teach. And that's the story called Tough High School Geometry Teacher, Two Fingers on His Right Hand in Psychological Nudity. Read it to your children. I'll be right back.
Savage.
An old 60s song, I remember everything. It was, you know, paradoxical. Kill for peace. Hello? Turn it off already. They don't get it. I can see already the mind. The feedback tells me they don't get it. The average person. You know, it was like in Johnson. He destroyed villages in Vietnam to save them. They dropped a napalm on a village and wiped everyone off the map in order to save the village. They had to destroy it. No, they gave speeches like that. In order to save the village, I had to destroy it. Now we come to 2008. We have Doofus there in the White House telling us to save the free market, he had to destroy it. Listen to this again. Yeah, listen.
Well, I obviously have made a decision to make sure the economy doesn't collapse. I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
And okay, hold it. Please, the George Bush Museum of Mangalisms. Maybe we can create a little museum in San Francisco like a Hubert's Flea Circus kind of thing. Like you go down into a subterranean basement and you have the George Bush mangalisms of his entire career. This would be the entrance you get in. That you hear for nothing on the way in. And you pay a buck to come on in. And over the years, 8 years of it, I never saw anything like that. How did we survive this guy? Answer, we haven't. That's all. Do you remember I told you 6 months ago that if you think Bush has caused damage so far, you're right, but you've seen nothing yet? Then, boom, comes the financial meltdown. You found out the Treasury Secretary is who he is. He worked for Goldman Sachs. I said Goldman Sachs before you haven't heard the word Goldman a year ago. Now, it gets even worse because it's not over yet. It's not over yet. He says to save the free market, he destroyed the free market or abandoned it. This is already – how much time does he have left? Teddy, shut up. You're in a radio studio. Where do you think you are, at home? My dog has no respect. Barks in the middle of a show. You deserve a bonus, Teddy, because of your good work this year on the Savage Nation as my mascot. You're going to get a big bonus, Ted. Portland, Oregon. Liz, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Savage.
What's on your mind quickly?
Well, very quickly, I'm actually affected, as of yesterday, by our friend Bernard. I'm originally from New York City and Palm Beach, Florida. And I've been affected personally by this despicable man.
How?
My father invested everything he had into one man because of all of his posse of friends, shall we say.
So your father lost a lot or everything?
Everything.
What?
And I said, yeah. He said, please, I don't want a heart attack today. Just let me be. And...
So I assume that you, I want to be delicate about this, are you now without revenue?
Well, let's just say I'm not ever going to get anything.
Well, I mean, but you weren't living on your father's largesse, were you, or were you?
I was not. I was at a point. My ex-husband worked for my father for several years, and I have two children that were beneficiaries.
No, but for you to go from New York and Palm Beach to Portland means you are running away from that whole world, right?
Pretty much. I don't wear makeup. What you see is what you get. I've never had surgery to enhance any of my bodily parts.
Oh, my God. You know, I saw a woman the other day. I'm not going to say where. I've never seen such mangled face surgery in my life. You talk about the surgery where they're putting on faces on people. Half the women in Marin County need to go to that Cleveland Clinic to have a new face put on. After all the mangled surgery, they need a new face.
They do.
I swear to God, it's frightening. I don't even laugh at it. I feel bad for them. Maybe the full-body burqa will come in America, where only the slits of the eyes will show. There may be some benefit to it. Maybe that'll start going around, because these women have had their faces mutilated by these cosmetic surgeons. I don't get it. I'd rather see an aging face than what they do to themselves, Liz.
I know. It's disgusting, actually.
So, Liz, how old is your father, quickly?
He's 78.
He's wiped out?
Yeah.
Okay. The number, 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 or above?
Above.
10 or above? Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That means the grandson better really put down the pot and start studying for something.
They are. Actually, I'm very proud of them. One lives in Los Angeles.
Good.
And,
good. So you got them out of the cesspool of Palm Beach. Do kids grow up sane in Palm Beach, Liz?
No.
Yes or no?
No, absolutely.
Not one of them. I don't know how. I could never have seen raising a child. If I had money, I wouldn't have lived there. I would have kind of hidden the money from the kids. I certainly wouldn't have made them, you know. You make them work. The bottom line is make them work in Wendy's like I did. Make them work in Wendy's at 14 and take a bus.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Of the United States, in an interview on television, referred to John as that poor boy. And I think that was sincere. And that's why I have never eliminated, although it's not taken for granted by us, I've never eliminated the idea that President Bush might think it's the right thing to do now that John has served 7 years to give him a commutation.
That's the radical left-wing lawyer, James Brosnahan, attorney for John Walkerlin, affectionately known as Rat Boy on this program, who says that Rat Boy, who served 7 years in prison for fighting against, well, let us say fighting alongside with the enemy, if you remember the story, that old Bushy should commute his sentence. Now, if Bush commutes this guy's sentence and leaves Ramos and Compion in prison, you'll understand who you have for a president. That's all I could say to you. If Bush has the audacity or the insanity to commute the sentence of Rat Boy, John Walker Lind, and to leave in prison two heroic Border Patrol agents who are in jail, even though 99 congressmen have said they are innocent, then you'll know who you have for the presidency. That's all I could say for you. No, I'll ask you the question. Should Rat Boy be commuted, his sentence commuted? No, not in my opinion. He fought with the enemies. Lucky he wasn't hung, that little bum. Now, many of you don't know who Rat Boy is. You'll find out during this hour. We did affectionate pieces about him over the years. You should also look up his lawyer's background, James Brosnahan. and see what a prize he is. Always worked for far-left causes, in my analysis, just like the attorneys who worked for CARE against me. Another group of silk-glove, white-glove, left-wing rats who take cases like this just to give us the middle finger. No, Mr. Bush, don't, please don't, commute the sentence of John Walker Lind. Commute the sentence of Randy Duke Cunningham, an American war hero who served 7 years, or close to it. Yes, commute the sentence of Randy Duke Cunningham, who fought for America, not against America, Mr. Bush. Portland, Oregon, Gil, you're on the Savage Nation.
Well, you kind of hit my thunder there, Doctor. I was wondering what more the president can do. I heard that first prediction by you 6 months ago about we're not done yet. So what do you think?
We're not done yet. So you're asking me what's coming now? What's the next insult?
That would be my question. You're pretty prescient, so I'm going to throw it at you, sir.
I don't even dare. I don't dare guess. I don't know. I don't know. He could tell us he's abdicating. He's moving to Shanghai or to Saudi. He could tell us. One day he could tell us that he's been taken in under the protection of the King of Saudi Arabia, and he's moving to Riyadh. Thank you very much. Hasta la vista, senor. Happy New Year and goodbye. I don't know what this guy could do. He looks like the whole world has collapsed around him. I'm sorry to tell you, but that debacle in Iraq with the shoe, it was as close to the end of a regime I've ever seen, of everything coming apart, where even his bodyguards couldn't defend him.
I guess my question to him, or to you, is I wonder what happened to those shoes.
Wow, can you imagine what the Iraqi shoes would bring on eBay?
See them. I'd love to see
them. I bet you that Sean Penn would wear them proudly the rest of his natural life as he treks across Bolivia and Colombia trying to imitate the steps of Che Guevara.
It's a size 10 shoe that he threw.
Oh, I got pains in my stomach from all of this. 1-800-449-825. I think this is as good a time as any. How long do we have as the Rat Boy piece? How long is the Rat Boy story? It's a fiver. My Rat Boy piece, which was so good. I'm going to take a few more callers, take a break, and I'm going to come back to a real treat, which is the Rat Boy piece that we did years ago, which was wonderful during the period of Rat Boy, because I live near the high school that Rat Boy went to. It's a special school for special children who refuse to learn. So they give them a special, you know, curriculum. No reading, no writing, no arithmetic, so far as I could tell. They plant corn in the ground while smoking outside on a bike path. They plant corn with their foot, but they don't water the corn because that would be manual labor, which is prohibited in Marin unless you have an Hispanic name and you're an illegal alien. So they don't actually water the corn, but they get to throw the corn seed in the ground and stomp on it. And then when it doesn't grow, they get mad and they throw a fit and they're given some kind of medication because they can't understand why the corn didn't grow. play the General Taylor song. It's playing in my head. I don't understand why, over and over and over again. It's stuck in the head. It is stuck in my head.
Died long ago, walking the mountain, carry him along. He died on the plains of old Mexico. Carry him to his burying ground. Way, hey, stormy, walking the mountain, carry him along. Way, hey, stormy, carry him to his burying
ground. Burial ground.
We'll dig his grave with a silver spade.
Walk him along. Dig his grave with a silver spade.
A shroud of the finest silk will be made.
A shroud of the finest silk will be made. You may as well get dark humor right now because it's all what you're going to have left. How could Bernie Madoff walk the streets of New York and have wait, let me back up here. When I saw that, how could Bernie Madoff walk in the streets of New York today with a smirk on his face? Now, I got to tell you something. If my father, may he rest in peace, was poor, but if he had had money and been snookered by this guy, I would have, well, let's just say I wouldn't have let him walk in the streets without having given him a Bronx cheer. No one said anything to him. No one cursed him. No one called him a name, let alone something else. How does the man have the audacity? There's a word I'm looking for. It's not even audacity. Audaciousness, you would think, is the part of the nature of a con man like him. That's a given. There's another word I'm looking for that I can't quite grasp. This would take an English professional to give me the correct word. Audaciousness applies, yes, to this guy, Bernie, whatever his name is. Bernie Ward? No. You know, I don't trust any grown man whose name ends like an IE. Sandy Berger. Sandy Berger, Sox Berger. whenever they give you a fun, boyish first name, you better make sure your Glock is loaded and your door is barred, because you know they're no good. No grown man should have a name that ends like a Y or an IE. That's all I can say. Anyone that converts it to a boy or a chick's like name, watch out, man. Bernie. They're always nice, like Bernie. Who else? Wait, there was another federal guy with that name Bernie, wasn't there? Wasn't there a Bernie, a federal guy with Bernie? Everyone knew him as Bernie. Bernie Ward, I mean, the local talk show host that went away for the child porn thing. And he didn't get to go to Lompoc. Oh, no, he didn't go to Lompoc. Apparently, once you get into the maws of the criminal justice system, it's out of the hands of your lawyer. They sent him, I think, to Oklahoma. Is he with the Okies over there? Now, where is he? What state did they send him to? Texas. Oh, yeah. He'll get some good justice over there. All right, Mr. Ward, come on out here. We got your pork and beans for you here. Yeah. All right, you're going to be serving your time, not in a protected lockdown, but you're going into the general population in a prison in Texas. What? That can't be. Chicago, Dennis, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Who would you say is your person of the year if you had to vote?
My person of the year would be any boy who served in Iraq in a combat zone would be my man of the year. Any one of them. And I would say that, you know, like the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier kind of thing, Dennis. This would be the person of the year for every man who served in Iraq in a combat situation. They're my man of the year.
I understand. Great.
That's it. They have the guts. Without them, we're finished. They'll run right over us. You understand that or not? I love when Bush gets up and starts getting teary-eyed over what he achieved in Iraq and Afghanistan. Like, he did it through great sacrifice. Oh, yeah. Oh, it was a tough road, but we got liberation for the Iraqis, and it's a wonderful thing. Go tell it to the people who have a flag left, not a son. They got a flag in there on their mantle, not a son. Yeah, you save your tears for them, Mr. Bush. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So the lawyer for Rat Boy, John Walker Lynn, has the nerve to say today that President Bush should commute the sentence of this traitor because he served 7 years. And I am outraged, frankly, because I fear Bush could do it. Bush is moving to the left as fast as possible, just as McCain is, in order to curry favor with the left-wing administration. And I have for you the original piece we did when Rat Boy was discovered and arrested. Listen.
This is Graham Hancock on special assignment with Michael Savage reporting from the field. Today we're examining the question of what happened. What created Johnny Jihad? What were the forces that molded this unfortunate man's life? Here, we attempt to demonstrate what happened, the reasons.
We now take you to the imaginary home of the boy Taliban in A Day in the Life of the Boy Taliban, Johnny Jihad, Fairfax, California, a town without pity. And we imagine a scene such as this may have occurred. Little boy Taliban has just soiled his diaper. He has then picked up the diaper and said,
doo-doo.
And smeared it on the wall.
Oh, Johnny, what did you do? Johnny, that is... Oh, honey.
How dare you interfere with our son's creative abilities, you chauvinist pig.
Oh, God.
Don't you realize that's as good as any Renoir? Our son is destined to be a great artist. But if you don't stop interfering, he'll end up in the gutter. Besides, it's a rental. Let those bourgeois pigs take care of the mess.
Next scene I would imagine would be Johnny Boy in school being asked to do the Pledge of Allegiance. Although in Fairfax, California, the pledge has been banned since the Civil War, we would imagine at some point in his early days of schooling, he might have been asked to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I refuse to do the Pledge of Allegiance. My mother says I don't have to. You know, I'm not going to waste my time pledging my allegiance to a bunch of dead old white men. Besides, this is a pig nation. Who wants to be a part of it anyway?
Oh, in the next scene, the teacher turns him on to smoking pot.
Johnny.
Oh, teach, what's happening, dude?
Are you still smoking those Lucky Strikes?
Yeah, it's all I can afford, man.
Come on over here. Let me expand your horizons.
Whoa.
Little... Kona Gold for you.
Kona Gold, huh? I'll take some of that.
The next scene is, of course, a hardened convict from San Quentin who's out on work release, and his work is teaching children multiculturalism.
When you're incarcerated, you begin to understand that there is a general oppression that exists in our country.
Right on,
and what we need is liberation from that oppression. And when you find a higher state of consciousness connected to the greater source of understanding, that is a point of time at which your mind is liberated and the shackles of intellectual control are thrown off, and you're able to function on a higher level, being free from the laws and the conscience.
The next scene is he's in Tamiskil High School, the school for special troublemakers. He's trying to grow corn. He puts the corn in the ground and steps on it with his foot.
Dude, I don't know why I should have to water this corn. Huh. I mean, it's natural, you know? Huh. I put it in the ground, I cover it with the soil. Let nature do the rest. It's really taking me down that I have to do so much work in order to create my food, man. I don't know. My mom never raised me to do this kind of thing. Help me. I'm completely lost.
How about Johnny's first date?
Johnny, what's the matter with you? Why won't you kiss me? Don't you like me?
Oh, you have germs. You're a girl. And
what, you don't like girls? What's your problem?
I hate my mother. So, can't you have more sensitivity for me? I'm going through something really difficult.
How about we take you to Johnny Jihad's cousin in Berkeley, California?
There's no actual released evidence that links Osama bin Laden to this.
Seems to be genetic.
Our parents taught us not to hit when we were young, not to hit back. And that's exactly what we're doing.
After being indoctrinated by the liberal left, Johnny had one final discussion with his father that sent him running off to the side of the Taliban.
Regarding the USS Cole, Johnny, I just think it was downright wrong.
Oh, you've got to be kidding, Dodd. That was a completely justifiable act of self-defense on behalf of the Yemen people. Oh, I can't take this anymore, dudes. I'm going off to war. I'm going to fight imperialism and greed and corporate control. I can't take it anymore.
It is uncertain what motivated Johnny Jihad to go off to war to take the side of the enemy. But here, Michael, is a final addendum to this story. Last week, just hours before Taliban and Al-Qaeda prisoners began their uprising in the northern Afghan fortress of Kalajangi, CIA agents interviewed Johnny Jihad. The interrogation, which took place shortly before one of the agents, Michael Spann, was killed, was videotaped by an Afghan cameraman. There you have it, up to this point. Back to you, Michael Savage.
So thank God this show, through comedy, through seriousness, remembers. And for this lawyer, for John Walker Lynn, to ask for a commutation from George Bush, you better send letters to the president expressing your opinion. Listen to clip 23. Here's the radical left-wing lawyer, in my opinion, James Brosnahan. Wait a minute. Demanding, in a way, through liberalism to Bush through an undercircuit. Listen.
The president of the United States, in an interview on television, referred to John as that poor boy. And I think that was sincere. And that's why I have never eliminated, although it's taken for granted by us, I've never eliminated the idea that President Bush might think it's the right thing to do now that John has served 7 years to give him a commutation.
I have a feeling the fix is in, okay? And I'm telling you, the American people, that this would be the final outrage of George Bush. If he released Rat Boy and didn't commute the sentence of an American Vietnam War ace, Randy Duke Cunningham, who, by the way, what Randy Duke Cunningham did was bad. It was nothing compared to what Paulson is doing. Nothing compared to what they're doing at the SEC. Nothing compared to the crooks at Lehman Brothers. Nothing compared to what you see going on Wall Street. Yet our war ace, Randy Duke Cunningham, has been in prison for 5 years because of a radical feminist attorney, U.S. attorney, was put there by Bill Clinton, who gave him 8 years. No, Cunningham should be commuted, not Rat Boy. That's one man's opinion.
Savage.
I mean, I hope you enjoyed that, because to me this is a radio classic, and David Rubin did it. That was his. We just talked for a minute ago. It was done in 03. 2003 we did that one. But wait, it gets better. We found another one that we did on Rat Boy, who they're asking for commutation of a sentence. I don't like the sound of his attorney almost tripping on his words, admitting that it's not admitting, but giving away that it's been done already. Play the lawyer for John Walker Lynn Rat Boy, or Jihad Johnny, again in clip 23. Let me hear it.
The President of the United States, in an interview on television, referred to John as that poor boy. And I think that was sincere. And that's why I have never eliminated, although it's not taken for granted by us, I've never eliminated
that's
the
it.
Idea.
Okay, hold it. He added, although it's not taken for granted by us, I think it's done. I think they bought their way out. You know, a library, a little donation. Look at the SEC. They looked the other way for 10 years with Madoff. So you're telling me you can't buy your way out of something here? Maybe we should have raised money for Randy Duke Cunningham and just brought a bag of cash to someone at the Justice Department. Maybe that's the way Cunningham could have gotten out of jail. You know, just deliver a sack of cash like in a banana republic. What are we becoming as a nation? When they could take a rat boy like this and talk about getting him out while a war hero is still rotting in jail. What kind of country is this? Or Ramos and Compion, two brave Border Patrol agents who do their job and are put in jail because of something, and you know what it must be. And Bush is approached by almost 100 congressmen and women who say it's unfair to give them 11 years, and Bush gives them the middle finger. What's wrong with that picture? Huh? So now for your listening pleasure. Well, I'll take some callers first. Montana Greg, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. I just wanted to pay you a compliment that I'm not sure I've heard before, and if it's been said, I apologize. But one thing I really like about your show and about you is that you convey the same message over and over, but you do it creatively, and you use a variety of media such as poetry and stories and music, and you're unpredictable, and I think that's one thing that's really set you apart, even from the folks that are larger in the markets than you. And I never have to wonder what types of morals and values I'm going to hear, but what keeps me excited is how you deliver. And
you know, you actually analyzed to the finest degree exactly what makes this show work. And so I'm going to send you a copy of Psychological Nudity, because you can't predict what's in this book either. He said it exactly the way it is. You know, I'm not going to compare or contrast to anyone else. It's just I am who I am. One of these days, I'm going to talk about a topic I've been meaning to get to, which is how we are devolving as a civilization because of a mass influx of illiterate immigrants who are not even literate in Spanish, by the way. Most of them are illiterate in Spanish. I don't think you understand this. They can't even read adequately or write adequately in their native language. And we have brought so many millions of illiterates into the country that the entire society is degenerating. We are devolving as a society in so many different ways. And you look at rap music, that's a devolution of music. That's not an evolution, it's a devolution. And if you think about writing itself, even before Neolithic times, men were beginning to write. You know about the Azilian rock pictures that you've seen. The Azilian rock pictures show the beginning of the writing process. And many of these rock pictures show hunts and expeditions. And in most of these human figures, they're plainly drawn as by a young child. In most cases, the painter wouldn't even bother with a head and limbs. He would just indicate men by a vertical and one or two transverse strokes the way a child would. It's the same with our language and with our music today. Even with our political speech, it's not much different than a zillion rock pictures. You say, where's the leadership? Where's the inspiration? You listen to George Bush. He speaks as though he's painting a zillion rock pictures. You understand that? West Virginia, Travis, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, the reason I'm calling was to ask if you have any plans for the next project, now that psychological nudity has been completed. I ordered my copy on August 25th, the day it became available to order.
Hmm.
And I had a suggestion that perhaps you might consider, and that would be to put together a greatest hit CD of, from the radio program. And before each clip, you could introduce and put that put the greatest hits pieces in context.
Well, would you? Okay, let me ask you something. Would you include the Rat Boy piece in that?
I certainly would. I certainly would.
I don't know what the greatest hits would consist of, Travis. It's very hard for me as a performer to actually look back over all these years and come up with the, you know, 50 greatest hits or something like that. Maybe that's something for people to call in on when we can do that another day. But I really, but let me answer your question. I have thought about what I want to do in 2009 with regard to a project. One was the Michael Savage movie, and it's still being talked about, and I've gone back and forth on it for 2 years. I'm not talking about a locally produced or individually produced piece. I'm talking about a Hollywood, you know, for want of a better phrase, get a conservative writer, conservative director, conservative producer and distributor. And I've talked about it. And do a release into 700 independent theaters and let the chips fall where they may and see if people go to it or not. And then release it on CD. That's one thing I wanted to do with basically me narrating my life story. Archival footage that I have, and I have a lot of it going back to from a long time, and then use the old documentary style of where you know that great documentarian we have, and I'm sorry I forget his name, maybe someone can help me, who did the Civil War series, where you pan over a photograph and tell a story, that type of thing. That's one project. I also have a cookbook. Believe it or not, people have asked me for a cookbook, Travis. I actually have a cookbook finished that would be worthy of doing, and I think people would like that. So there are several things on my spit that are rotating around over the over the coals.
Ken Burns.
Of all three, Travis, which one appeals to you most? The cookbook, the life story movie, the Michael Savage story, or the CD Greatest Hits?
Well, as much as I would enjoy the thought of you making Beowulf work extra hours putting together the CD clips, I think I'd prefer to see the movie. I believe that would be the most interesting of the three.
I'll tell you why I may do the movie. It would be to upset the Obama nation. In other words, if it were to open in 700 to 1,000 theaters, can you imagine what would go on outside the theaters from all of the liberals who believe in free speech and freedom of expression? And it would put Hollywood into a bind, because they certainly couldn't support censorship, could they? Or a riot outside a theater, could they, Travis?
I don't think so.
No. And so, therefore, it might have the same kind of, as I say, cult appeal almost, and I mean that in a positive way, as did the movie that Mel Gibson did, that the major media ignored, and yet it became a monster of a hit because the Christians went to it in great numbers. Now, I'm not counting just upon the Christian audience here. I think my audience, which is awesome in size, would go out of their way to stand online outside a movie theater just to give the people in the surrounding neighborhoods a middle finger and say, you know what? I'm going to this movie. I want to see the name Michael Savage on a local movie marquee because that's what I want to see. Too bad. And it might be fun just to do that, Travis. I have distribution. I have funding. I basically have the script through all of the books I've written and my material. I just haven't gotten it together to really decide in my own head whether I want that kind of exposure.
Well, I think it would be an excellent Christmas gift for the 2009 season, as is...
Interesting. Open at Christmas 09. Travis, I'm going to send you another copy of Psychological Nudity for bringing this up. I thank you for indulging me. Yeah, it's a long project, but I'm ready for it in a way. I have to transfer all the Super 8 movies, going back all the way to Boyhood, the uncles, the aunts, God only knows some of that stuff. Yeah, you can make gold out of it if you get a good film editor and you have a good narration script that's tight and not self-indulgent and not maudlin. You can make this really move. I mean, I got Super 8 movies of me and Fiji with a young family. I got to tell you, some scenes come to my mind. How about a young white kid, 2 years old, with parchment white skin, with long red hair? He's 2 or 3 years of age, hanging from a bamboo pole by his hands as all black kids are laughing, lifting him up and down, because they really have never seen a young white kid before, especially one with red hair. You talk about racial tolerance and getting along. How about that for a picture? Because I got it. I got that, okay? It happened. I was there. There was no racism in the villages of Fiji. They didn't understand what it was, particularly the children. So, I mean, I have some pretty remarkable things that are worth showing. I don't need lectures by the Obama politically, the Mao Tse-Tung brigades coming out of the Obama administration telling me about, you know, hands across the races here. I lived it. I don't need a lecture on it. And the visual of that would be phenomenal. I think it would be a great thing for the world to see. So there are many, you know, there are things I'd like to show that might be of some value to society. It's not about the money. Don't you understand that? The first thing people say is money and this and that. How much can you spend in your life? What do I need right now? All I really want at this point in my life is a couple of years of health. What can I ask for? I don't know. You know, I'm starting to sound like an older guy, but I am an older guy. I don't want to accept it. But that's why I'm playing all of these songs. It's like weird music with the shrouds and the bury me now. You know, it's like starting to plague me. And I don't know why, and I hope it's not something that I shouldn't, you know, be thinking along the line. But something's bothering me along those lines, you know. You know, I had the colonoscopy. That was clear. I had the brain scan. That was clear. I mean, there's always something you miss anyway. This is clear. That's clear. And then you drop dead of an infected toenail that spreads through your head. Because how about this? You know, this is what's really starting to bother me lately. I'm trained in science. I've been obsessed with science since I'm a kid because it was the only rock of stability in my life. The madness of the world, the tragedy of everyday life. So I was always drawn to the sciences because at least you could find some truths there, I felt. You know, you could test the hypothesis and you could either prove it true or it could prove it to be false. And that's what was the good thing about science. You could eliminate a lot of doubt and come down to some crystalline realities in science. Now, it's not true much anymore because much of science has become so politicized that they investigate what they already know they want to prove to be true. Or in the case of the AMA and the drug companies, they investigate what they want to prove to be false, such as the value of vitamins. Either they use the wrong amounts, the too small a dose, or the wrong variety of a vitamin. For example, they're always trying to prove vitamin C and vitamin E doesn't work, even though they know it's probably the best thing in the world for you, and they take it themselves because they can't patent vitamin E or vitamin C. So they keep telling you this study proved beyond a reasonable doubt at the so-called Mayo Clinic, which to me I call the mayonnaise clinic in terms of what I think of it. And they tell you vitamin E doesn't work for anything. In fact, it makes it worse. But if you actually investigate the kind of vitamin E that they used, they did not use mixed tocopherols. They used one type of tocopherol, and they used too small a dose to have any beneficial effect whatsoever. It's the same with the vitamin C. They use a subclinical dose, and it doesn't work. That's not what Dr. Pauling taught us. So what I'm saying is science today is so distorted that it's hard to have any faith in the sciences. Do you understand what I'm saying? Nevertheless, to get back to the main point, I've always been interested in science and tried to find where the truths lie. So one show after another now tries to prove that God didn't create the world, that there was no evolution, that there was no creationism, that it's all based upon an accident in the universe, atheism, there is no God, and that the dinosaurs roamed the earth, you know, in another era, the Eocene, the Pliocene, the Miocene, all aboard, and that, you know, 60 or some odd million years ago or more, all of life was wiped out on earth. All the animal life was wiped out because of a comet or an asteroid hitting the earth, causing a great upheaval. And you look at a thing like that, and then you wonder, why should I brush my teeth, so to speak? How in the world can you go on with your day if you actually were to believe that this is factually true based upon the geologic and other evidence that there was life, you know, in other times, millions upon millions of years ago, in the age of the fishes, the age of the coal swamps, or the age of reptiles, or the age of the birds, or the age of mammals, and then the monkeys and the apes and the submen, and then the Neanderthaler and the Rhodesian man, and then the first true men and things of that nature, all the way up to today. If you would actually believe that the story of our world is such that as this earth swings around the heavens in the beginnings of life, all of this occurred. And we evolved from plant lice, for example. And over millions of years, this and that, and then they were wiped out because of asteroids or comets. How in the world, what makes you go on? That's what I like to know. How do you do it? I'll tell you how I do it. I do watch these shows, or members of my family won't watch them anymore because they get upset by them, because it almost renders your life meaningless. It makes you feel as though there's no God in heaven, which is what the establishment wants, by the way, and that you there's no meaning, no morality, no nothing. There are no rules, in other words. In other words, if you come to understand that it's all an accident, as they wish to teach you, then you come to believe there is no God. Then you come to believe there's no reason for morality. Then you come to believe there's no need for the Ten or any other commandments. Then you come to live in San Francisco, and you live on drugs because you can't face the day, because you have nothing to believe in. And so since I don't use anything to get through a day other than my faith in God and faith in the eternal rock of ages, I have come to deal with it another way, which is it's not either or. I have told you how I can sort through all of this. First of all, if you watch these shows and they talk about the asteroids and wiping out all of life, where the dinosaurs were here, and they, wow, Molly, they were here 60 million years ago. They were so big and mankind wasn't, and they got wiped out. Oh, my God. So what am I? I'm just a bug, so I may as well, you know, do it in the road. That's what they want you to think in San Francisco. What I do is I compartmentalize, first of all. In other words, watch those shows and compartmentalize them and say, well, that's very interesting. This probably did happen. There's no question in my mind the geological record is true. However, compartmentalize it and put it into a compartment in your mind. And then come to understand that the biblical sense of time, and God created the world in 7 days, is different than what we know time to be. Those 7 days, each day could be 10 million years, or each day could be 100 million years. Or God could have created an earth at that time without man as an experiment, and then decided that he needed someone in his own likeness. And then, the number of years ago that your Bible tells you, he created man. And this is his last experiment. And boy, is he fed up. I'll be right back. Savage. Well, I know this is not a political show at this point, but to me, ultimately, existence is quite political. How you view existence is perhaps the most political question of all when you think about it. And the knowledge that we all possess of life before the beginnings of human memory and tradition is astonishing. You know, it's preserved in shale and slate, limestone, sandstone, bone, shells, fiber, stems, fruits, scratchings and such, side by side with the ripple marks of the earliest tides and the pittings of the earliest rainfalls. So it's only through the sedulous examination of this record of the rocks that we can paste together the past history of the Earth's life. And we still don't know what it is. But as we've discussed once or twice before in the Savage Nation, there's a way to be very religious, believe in God, and believe in science. And I keep telling you that it's not either or. I want to repeat again for those of you who are young and misled. Take a picture of Einstein. The atheists on the college campuses show the picture of Einstein with his tongue out as though he was a pothead. They got that picture and suddenly he's like a whack job nut. You know, he was anything but. Einstein was a very devoutly religious man in the sense that he believed in God. He said the longer he studies what the perimeters of the universe are, the more he understands there has to have been a God, that God has to have created it. Ask, you know, read the writings. Don't trust your college professor who may, you know, be trying to mislead you or ignorant of the fact. Einstein was not a practicing Jew, but he was born a Jewish man and he died a believer in God. So you should understand that only because he was such a great scientist. So if you're in the sciences, it doesn't mean you have to throw away religion. In fact, you should grasp religion. It'll keep you sane in an insane world and in the corrupt world that science has become. Be a Copernicus. Don't be a crook.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is third round tonight of the Savage Nation. If you just tuned in, it's an interesting show. You know, we're in a kind of lag period here, middle of December. Terrible things are going on. We have the obscenity of the federal government failing us on virtually every level, and the obscenity of the head of the Security and Exchange Commission, Christopher Cox, who I've been calling out by name for 6 months now, having the audacity to praise the professionals at the SEC. You got the scandal of scandals, $50 billion. You got the bum who allegedly did it, walking around with his head held high like he's a hero, like he's suddenly a celebrity Madoff. I don't know how the man does it, but something's wrong with the whole picture. Looks to me like he's going to get off with it. Yeah, it looks to me that he already paid the right politicians to walk. I swear to you, something's wrong with the picture. Then you got Bush. I don't know whether the guy's I don't know what to make of him anymore. He says he abandoned the free market to save the free market. There's no beginning or end, which is why I told you I started to drift off into philosophy and geology at the end of the last hour, you know, because it gets crazier by the second. And so your mind races to say, all right, I can't pay any attention to this anymore. It's why I originally went into science. I had to get away from politics. And then I went into politics in 1994 again, and here I am so many years later, and it's getting crazier by the second. It's almost impossible to decipher what is true and what is false. All we know is that people lost tens of millions of dollars or millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands, and the man who allegedly did it is still walking the street, while if your son jumped the subway turnstile and you were a single black woman, he'd be in the tombs for 30 days. That's all we know so far. That's a definite. That you can take to the bank. Then you got Rat Boy, Johnny Jihad, the American-born Taliban, John Walker Lind. And here's a guy who's been in prison a number of years, and his lawyers have the nerve to ask Bush to commute his sentence at a San Francisco conference today, asking the president to show mercy during the Christmas season by commuting a son's sentence. I would say that if Bush does that, this will be the end of the road for him. He should commute the sentences of Randy Duke Cunningham, Ramos, and Compion. That's what he should be doing. If he wants to rescue his legacy, that's what he must do. He better stop listening to the liberals out there, because they are really seriously misleading George Bush. That's one man's opinion. That's all. Now I'll take your callers on any topic, because we had some great topics so far today. Anthony in Chicago, go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, if religion was used to control the masses, then what's the justification of the media for destroying religion?
Well, I'm not sure I even understand your question. Am I to assume that religion was created to control the masses?
No, I was just saying if one was to go over under that assumption, then obviously as...
All right, so wait, let's go back. So in other words, Karl Marx said religion is the opiate of the masses. So if we're to believe that that's true, what are we to make of the media?
Correct, in their pursuit of destroying religion.
Well, because they want to substitute themselves, meaning entertainment, for religion. In other words, why do we idolize, or why do so many people idolize celebrities, so-called? Because they're the demigods of our time. They're the golden idols. They hold themselves up, or they're held up by people who own them as idols for the fools to worship. And so we move back to pre-biblical times in our worship of so-called celebrities.
Which is kind of the point that I was making, is that how you said we have devolved as a society, it kind of reflects in the way the media has, seems like they don't want to control us no more, Well, they do, but in the manner that we idolize these prostitutes.
Correct. Well, because there's a profit to be made from these products called people. For example, let's take Tom Cruise. We all know the rumors. Let's just take the man's art. He has no art. The man is trying to play the aristocratic German general who plotted to kill Hitler in a new movie. The Germans have rejected the movie for one reason. They say that Tom Cruise cannot project the aristocratic nature of the general who planted that bomb. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
How can you ever believe that Tom Cruise could play an aristocratic German general? It's impossible. He doesn't have the bearing for it. I don't know of any American actor who would have the bearing to play an aristocratic German. Let's go to another movie. A director named Steven Soderbergh, who's done some interesting movies, directs a fiction called Che Guevara. And he glorifies this man, Che Guevara, in a way that's laughable. And he runs the film Che at the Ziegfeld Theater in Manhattan, New York. And what happens is someone yells out that Che was a murderer. Listen to clip 27.
He was a hard ass.
He's a murderer.
Okay, fine. My point is... This is my point. If you think Che is a murderer, is the Che that's portrayed in this film incapable of the acts that you would say he participated in? And I would say to you, as far as I'm concerned, the Che that's portrayed in these films tonight is absolutely capable of those acts and would say they were necessary.
You hear them applauding? The acts of murder, in other words, and they applaud. No, I'm going to go right through this break. I'm going to talk. So here we have an American director, Steven Soderbergh, who enjoys a certain degree of acclaim amongst a certain group of people in America. He's not a household name by any means. He tends to do very confused films that are well done, but, you know, you have to be into it. So he creates a movie about a murderer named Che Guevara, who has been glorified by the Marxist left for so long. And someone screams out in the audience that he was a murderer. And Soderbergh goes through a whole roundabout way of saying, well, sure, he was capable of murder, if that's what you're saying, but that would have been justified. And the leftist Marxists in the audience, the Obama voters, applaud. Do you understand that?
Yes, I do, Dr. Savage. And another thing, I am an independent filmmaker in Chicago area and a screenwriter as well. And I rack my brains out every day with the garbage and filth with these screenplays that are coming out. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's about a man falling in love with a man, a dove falling in the water, bubbles flying up. There's nothing manly anymore out there. The Brando, the Godfather. There's nothing out there that's worth anything because it's all the movie business.
Yeah, that's right. The movie industry has been taken over by the radical left deviant crowd. You understand that. And so they push their own agenda, which is why people don't go to them anymore, you know, unless they want to watch a cartoon. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I don't happen to have the article I was looking for, which was up on my site yesterday. I hope it can be put back up, the review of this movie, Che. I think we had it up yesterday. It may still be there. I can't find it. But it was so well written by a reviewer from the New York Post that it's worth reading. I'll find it. I'll put it back up. But thus far, what we've said on the show today is that there's a silver lining to some of the Madoff fraud in that extremist liberal groups have been defunded in that they've lost their funding. You just got to look at some of them and what they stood for, to outlaw the death penalty, to push marijuana, you know, you name it. They were getting money through one way or another through Madoff related charities. Some of the charities that invested with Madoff in others went bankrupt. So now all these guys who are living on the largesse of this can't suddenly take the side of people on death row, if you know what I'm saying. So that's another thing. Yeah. PTA mom and a boy found half naked in a car in New York. You hear this? Police arrested Joan Tooks Rickey after allegedly finding her in the backseat of a parked car on school grounds with a 13-year-old boy. Why? The police were patrolling the parking lot of a school, and the windows were steamed up. They knock on the window. There's a woman half naked with a boy half naked. Do you hear this? This is going on in America today. This is a mother of a girl who knew this boy. I don't know how this ends. But when you consider that there was a time, I think in the 17th century, that the church was so broke that they had prostitutes in the back of the churches of Europe in order to rake in some money. I mean, who knows? It could, you know, it'll go down. It'll come up again. Maybe the churches will have to take in hookers to make ends meet in 20 years or so. And people will be so debased morally that they'll accept. Who knows? I don't know. If Madoff could work the Jewish crowd like this and take away billions of dollars from Jewish charities and then walk the streets of New York and nobody screams at him, nobody throws a piece of gefilte fish at him, nothing. No one says a word to him. And he walks around proud, proud like he's a celebrity. Any minute he should be on Larry King. So Bernie, huh? How are you today, Bernie? We met, remember, at that in Palm Beach? So how do you feel today? Any truth to it, Bernie? Any truth to it, Bernie? The guy admitted it allegedly to the FBI that he ripped everyone off. So what do you think? You can come back from this, Bernie? Maybe he should run for the Senate. Maybe Bloomberg could make Madoff the mayor of New York. A perfect follow-up act. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, from the cosmic to the concrete, I go from the age of reptiles down to the age of the movie here. And that's the beauty of my mind, is that I can go from the cosmic to the concrete. I'm very lucky. Thank God. I haven't lost my mind yet. Thank you, Lord. We're talking about the Leni Riefenstahl of our time, Steven Soderbergh. Leni Riefenstahl, of course, was the propagandist filmmaker for Adolf Hitler. And now Soderbergh is the filmmaker for Joseph Stalin, in my opinion. So Steven Soderbergh, who has done Sex, Lies, and Videotape, Syriana, Aaron Brockovich, Traffic, and other movies, now comes out with a movie about Che Guevara. Che Guevara, as you well know, is a murderer, a stone-hearted executioner. So he does a movie about the guy that comes out, and here's a review from a great reviewer in the New York Post, Kyle Smith, and I got to read you some of it. He says, meet Che Guevara. Just think of him as Jesus plus Abraham Lincoln with a touch of Moses and Dr. Doug Ross. After 4.5 hours of watching Dr. Ernesto Che Guevara heal the sick, teach the illiterate, daze the women, execute the lawless, defeat the corrupt, uplift the peasantry, and spew the soundbite, I was convinced there would be a scene in which he turned water to Bacardi. He goes on, he says, you cannot spell cliche without Che. And as I endured this mad dream directed or perhaps committed by Steven Soderbergh, I wondered where I'd seen it all before. The booted stomping through the greensward, the jungly target shooting. It's a remake of Woody Allen's Bananas, right? Minus punchlines or perhaps with them. We are in a difficult situation, Che observes, at a point when his army is surrounded and forced to eat its horses. The story of the Argentine doctor Ernesto Che Guevara is played with much broody self-importance by Benicio del Toro. It will be shown in two parts after its one-week opening run. That way, on consecutive evenings, it can bore everyone but activist grad students. let's see. He goes on. He says, if ever a movie needed Kim Cattrall to slink into the frame, it's this one. Honey, love the beret, but if anything's to die for, it's the quilted Chanel tote, not toothless Bolivian farmers. Part one set almost entirely in Cuba, as Castro and Guevara creep through the jungle, builds to an exciting hand-to-hand fight in the streets, then ends abruptly before our heroes even parade into La Habana, though not before Che can deliver one last lecture on, quote, how I'd rather walk to Havana than drive in a stolen car. Part two skips to Che, Castro follies in Cuba, and Che's adventures in Africa to settle in 1966 Bolivia. Che will spend the next 2 hours trudging around the mountains, changing his name, accepting worship, asks a guerrilla junior, telling his men he'd rather die than slow them down, taking a break during a bizarre cameo by Matt Damon, and jumping the gun on Del Toro's next gig by gradually proceeding from unshaven to Wolfman. Che, although armed, allows himself to be captured alive, which means an amusing execution in the dust instead of righteous death in battle. Soderbergh, who went native and showed up at the Toronto Film Festival in chunky glasses and arrested for vagrancy grooming, takes Che's point of view as the moment of expiration arrives, sharing with us a vision of a blinding white light as the furry comandante slips into commie heaven. Say hi to the Rosenbergs for me. Fidel says, see you soon. Anyway, so that's what we have now in the movies. All these left-wing whack jobs pushing their agenda, trying to mind-bend an entire generation. So as I say, Soderbergh we're the only ones who got this sound, is at the Ziegfeld Theater in Manhattan the other day, and the audience, he's trying to tell Che Guevara was one thing when an audience member yells out, listen to clip 27 here again.
He was a hard ass.
He's a murderer.
Okay, fine. My point is... No, my point is... My, this is... Hold on a second. Hold on a second. This is my point. If you think Che is a murderer, is the Che that's portrayed in this film incapable of the acts that you would say he participated? And I would say to you, as far as I'm concerned, the Che that's portrayed in these films tonight is absolutely capable of those acts and would say they were necessary.
And say they were necessary. And the Marxist scum applaud, meaning they'd like to kill you as well if you love America. Now, Soderbergh, who is the Leni Riefenstahl of our time, as I say, goes on and even digs his heels in further. In clips 28 and 29, just run them.
Whether you agree with them or not, he says, we've done this, we're going to keep doing it, because we feel it's necessary to secure the revolution. It doesn't matter whether I agree with that or not. I have to present his point of view. I can't be half in and half out. And it doesn't matter if I agree with him.
Let's stop right there. Listen, you lying left-wing sack of garbage. What if you did a picture of Hitler and you said the same things about Hitler, you lying sack of garbage, and you say that your personal opinion on Che doesn't matter? By not taking a personal opinion or not showing the real negatives of him, you are taking an opinion. You're nothing but a low-life left-wing propagandist pimp. Soderbergh, you stink. You have become the Leni Riefenstahl of our time. I hate people like this. You know, they act like they're intellectuals and above the law, and they don't take a position. He's a brainwasher. It gets worse in 29. Play it.
There are a lot of people who ascribe a political motivation to me showing these two campaigns and eliminating his life as a bureaucrat in Cuba. And all I can say to you is, if you can't see the design behind what I showed...
All right, in other words, if you can't see that in his mind he knew he was executing people, then there's something wrong with you. Poo on you, Soderbergh. You stink. We'll go back to philosophy in a minute, but I want to get back to some pragmatic stuff. We have crooks and incompetents running the government, in my opinion. The dollar has suffered the largest decline in about 13 years. The U.S. currency slid to a 13-year low against the yen today, had its biggest one-day decline versus the euro after the Federal Reserve reduced interest again. You understand this? Do you actually believe that Bernanke and Paulson know what they're doing? You actually think they care about you? And in all of this, I'm going to raise the question until I get an answer. And it won't come to me, and it won't come through me. It'll come to you from some other source. There's many people listen to this show who don't call in and who I don't communicate with, but they get some fertile ideas. Where is George Soros in all of this? Now, George Soros, the big backer of Barack Obama, George Soros apparently runs one of the biggest hedge funds in the world. If Madoff lost $50 billion, has Soros made money? Lost money? Does he have anything to do with Madoff? Nothing to do with Madoff? Do they know each other? Does Soros have anything to do with the collapse of the dollar? After all, he almost broke the Bank of England. He almost broke the Malaysian currency. How do you know that it's not Soros trading the dollar down to break the economy? How do we know what's going on here? And should this man be stopped? You know, I for a long time have felt that currency trading is about the most insane thing permitted by a central government. That if we had a legitimate central government, they would not permit the currencies to be traded by currency traders. Because ultimately, you're taking the wealth of a nation and putting it in the hand of people that you can't trust. You understand what I just said to you? So I want these questions answered. I don't have the resources to answer any of these questions, but I still have the freedom to ask them. After Obama takes power and his regime begins, it's only a question of whether or not we will still have the power of the First Amendment to even ask questions. Boca Raton, Scott, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I don't own a television. My children and I encourage them to listen to you every night for a couple of reasons. Number one, your unabashed views about the importance of having some kind of moral underpinnings. I'm a rabbi, and it's important for them to hear that, you know, the belief in God is very important, and it's the foundation of a moral society.
Correct.
The other thing I want to tell you, one night I came home. I don't own a television, but I have a computer. My kids were watching something on the computer, and I said hello to them, and they didn't look up right away. Are you going to throw the computer down the stairs like Michael Savage's father, or like Michael Savage threw the television down the stairs? They remember
that? Wait, did they ask you that?
Yes, they did. Because they listened.
Oh, that's terrible. It was when I was much younger. I would never recommend that today.
Michael, let me ask you a question. You have a son who's been very, very successful and an ambitious entrepreneur. Why is it that you don't have him on the show or talk more about him and about his successes? I'm sure you're a proud father.
Because his life is his and it has little to do with me. Just as a, you know, there are parents who have children who wind up junkies. God knows, terrible things happen to them. And a parent at that point has to say, you know, I did the best I could, but it's really not a reflection of me. It's the same with a child's success. We may give birth to them and we may raise them as best we can, but I don't believe that a parent should take excessive credit for their success or excessive credit for their failures.
Even if you took partial success, I think it would be interesting to hear the father and son exchange because
I agree, but I think I'd rather have two parallel lives rather than one merged. And I really think that, you know, I don't want to take too much credit for his success. It's his. I have nothing to do with the business, Scott. Zero.
Well,
zero. I have nothing at all to do with it. Nothing. And so for me to imply that I had something to do with it, you know, other than we traveled when he was young to trade shows and I made him go to work at 14 in Wendy's by bus. And I taught him that he had to, you know, clean the leaves in the driveway. And this is an interesting story. When he was young and we lived in a certain town in Northern California, there were always interior live oak leaves in the driveway, which I detest to this day. I hate that tree. It reminds me of a period of my life that was not very good. So I said, look, you got to clean the driveway. I don't want to do it. What kid really wants to do it? So I said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you $2 if you clean the driveway. All right, so he did it for money. Well, I had a friend, a lib whack job from Berkeley, he lives there now, who said to me, how dare you? How dare you reward your child with money? I said, what, are you crazy? What do you mean reward my child with money? We live in a society where everything's done for money. What do you mean reward him? Well, needless to say, my son has turned out very well as a you know, businessman. I don't know what his son has done. And I hope his son has done well. But that's an example of the thinking, Scott. You know, why not pay your child to do the driveway?
I totally agree. And as I said before, it's really become part of our evening. My children and I listen to the show.
Well, I'm not a religious man, Scott, other than, am I not? I don't know how to put it. I don't know how to put it. I respect those who are enormously, whatever their religion may be. If they have a devout worship for God, it actually moves me. I don't know. I don't care what the religion is. There's something in me stirs when I see people who have such faith, whatever it may be and whatever the religion may be. You know, as long as it teaches them to be a better human being rather than, you know, something else, then the religion works for me, Scott. But as a trained theologian, what do you get out of my discussions of religion that you already don't know?
You know, even though, like, very often, like, you'll quote certain scriptures and that kind of thing from the Old Testament, which sort of reflect today's society, and I think it's nice to hear it from somebody with a very strong secular background that is able to extrapolate, you know, something from the biblical text, which is not outdated, which is even relevant today, and I think that...
Yeah, okay, well, let's go to Mr. Madoff. You're down in Boca Raton. He was not too far from you. What would you say the Bible would tell us about a guy like Madoff who took advantage mainly of his fellow religionists, his co-religionists? Although I doubt he was quite a religious man, I would think not. I'm guessing now. I'm sure that he took advantage of his co-religionists based upon ethnicity. What would you say the Bible would say about him?
Well, there's a very pithy quote, and it says in Hebrew, Ohev kesev velo yispa kesev. Somebody who loves money is never satisfied with money. So, which means that they'll go to any means to continue to amass wealth, even if it comes at the cost of friends and relatives.
But how can he face them? How could this man take money from charities that were doing good in some cases and live with himself? Tell me how the mind works in that case.
I think the question is far better than the answers that I can give. But as I said before, somebody who's a...
It would have to be somebody... Look, if somebody's ripping off that amount of money from charities, okay, and hiding it, he knows what he was doing all these years. They're bankrupt, a lot of them today, Scott. So did he get pleasure in doing this? Is he a sociopath, in your opinion? Well, now we're moving into the psychology rather than the theology, right? I mean, so we can leave it at that. I would think he's a sociopath, particularly when I looked at him today on television as he strode down the streets of New York after some kind of court appearance. He actually looked proud of himself and arrogant. It looked to me like the face of a sociopath. He thought he was John Gotti. Scott, let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity. You know, it's a secular book. There's not one F word in it. There's not a dirty word in the whole book, and yet it's done very, very well. Thank you. Somehow I learned that you can tell a story without cursing or resorting to being a dirtbag on Showtime, and you could still have an audience. So I'm going to send you a copy of that book so you can read it with your children, because I'm proud of it. There's not a word in that book that I would change to this day. Not a word. I'm already thinking of the second version of it already. You don't know what tomorrow brings. Somebody called me yesterday and said, why don't you read about that? I'm not going to read from the book right now. You don't know what tomorrow brings. That's a pretty good one. Here's one, on page 80. Tell me if you think this works today. But then I say, what about my poor country? What good is all this health? What good is reasonable success? If the have-nots are being brought in by the tens of millions, and if the have-nots are being told by these evildoers in politics that they can take from those who have created this, there's nothing to work for. They'll take it all away from your inheritors. They will give it away to the bums who didn't work for it, and that motivates millions of people like me. Let me tell you right now, we don't want the illegitimate taking away our livelihood, and we don't want the illegitimate stealing any more of our damn tax money. And I went on to the state of California, where we pay 11.5% of our gross income. 11.5% of our gross income. And I say, where does the money go? You say it goes for mental health, the last 1%? And I say, no, it probably goes to gray-bearded child molesters so they can write papers and go to congos. I guarantee you it doesn't go into primary care. Anyway, look, these are the musings of me, Michael Savage, loved by some and not loved by all, and that's the way life is. No one on earth today is loved by all. That's all I can tell you. I don't expect to be loved by all. All I need is my core audience. The rest I could do without. Biggest one-day slide against the euro. Who's in charge here? Who is at the helm? George Bush? You got to play this George. I'm telling you, there's something wrong with him. Listen to him stumbling around when he says he got to destroy the free market to save it. You got to hear this. Play
it. Obviously have made a decision to make sure the economy doesn't collapse. I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system. And I'm so sorry.
LBJ said he had to destroy the village to save the village. So we're back to where we were then. He had to destroy the free market to save the free market? I told you yesterday in the Soviet Union, the oligarchs are begging the government to bail them out. So Putin is saying, all right, I'll tell you what, we'll bail you out even though you robbed the country blind. But I want 25% of your company. So they say, gladly, fine, just bail me out and save me. That's called socialism is recurring in Russia. We are becoming a socialist nation as well. If you have the Treasury Department buying banks, investment companies, auto companies, insurance companies, and God knows what else Paulson is doing with the $2 trillion, and he won't disclose, we are in essence moving as rapidly as we can into a socialist-based economy. As is Russia. We're moving into one world socialism. Is it all one giant conspiracy? I'll be right back.
Savage.
All right, this just into the Savage Nation, the bankrupt state of California under the Austrian cream puff and his socialist Democrat cohorts has just come up with a new gas tax. Hold on to your hats. 39 cents a gallon is going to be added to gasoline under the Austrian cream puff and his socialist Democrat compadres in the state of California. $5.7 billion would be raised with a 39 cents a gallon tax on every gallon of gasoline. Can you believe this? Wait, it gets worse. There's no cuts. They're not cutting anything. Just like the psychopath in New York who lands tax after tax upon people and increases the budget. So you see tax and spend. Here we are again. If you're a contractor in the state of California, you better listen carefully. The new plan by the Austrian cream puff and his socialist Democrat compadres is seeking also to raise $2 billion in one-time funds by requiring independent contractors to withhold 3% of your pay rather than continuing to allow you to pay a lump sum income tax so they can steal your money in advance. Shall I go down the list of what's going to go on as well here? Other revenue increases include a 9.9% severance tax on oil produced in California. That's a real incentive to keep producing oil. And a 2.5% surcharge on the state income tax. What? 2.5% surcharge on the state income tax? Am I reading this correctly? They're adding 2.5% on the state income tax? That means I'm going to pay 10.5% plus 2.5%. I'm going to pay 13%. I'm making a statement right now. I'm going to make it right now. If they do this, if they raise the state income tax like this, they will lose between 20 and 50,000 families in the state of California in the top 1%. You'll say, well, who needs them? Let them go. Let me explain to you again. The top 1% of income earners in the state of California pay 50% of all state income taxes. Now, picture what will happen if a large percentage of this high-earning group decide to leave this the state of California. The net result will not be an increase, but a decrease in state income taxes. But you cannot explain that to an Austrian cream puff, nor to socialist Democrats who have never run a business. You're going to wind up eventually with a state that looks more and more like Poland looked before Glasnost, where the butcher stores have one salami in it, and a line is around the block trying to buy the salami. That's what happens when you have morons who have never run a business trying to run a state. So get ready for it. 39 cent a gallon tax on gasoline in the state of California, the cream puff. And it says a 2.5% surcharge on the state income tax, which I find to be absolutely astonishing. Was it voted on? No, absolutely not. Socialist Democrat fascists unveiled this plan today, and they said they can raise all of this with a simple majority vote, avoiding the need for Republican support. Now, how in the world can they do this? How can they do it? Because we haven't had a democracy in the state ever since Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer broke through the, I can't use the phrase, I'm not in a nightclub. Let's say the blank ceiling. We'll leave it at that. Lawmakers are trying to close a $40 billion deficit in the next 18 months. But instead of closing medical care to illegal aliens, instead of cutting off services to illegal aliens, such as schooling, medication, which would save the $40 billion, the socialist Democrats who were put in power by the illegal aliens are going to tax those who produce the revenue and tax the working people of the state of California in any way they can. So there it is. That's the story. That's the end of the show today. And Governor Arnold the Cream Puff Schwarzenegger agreed that taxes and spending cuts are needed to solve the crisis. He did nothing to stop the increased tax proposals. Tax proposals included in the new plan need only a simple majority vote, they say, because so-called state officials, who are criminals, by the way, have ruled that revenue-neutral budgeting, which I don't know what that means, revenue-neutral budgeting? That sounds like something Madoff would come up with. Does not require a two-thirds majority, they said. They made it up. Where's the Attorney General on this? Where is Attorney General Jerry Brown on this? He's the top lawmaker in the state. I ran into him last night in a restaurant. He actually came over to say hello, which I thought was quite brave of him. How does the top lawmaker in the state of California rule on this? Does he agree that they can just do this without a vote? If he does agree with them and he runs for the governorship, this will come back to haunt Jerry Brown. If he proposes to be a centrist governor, then he must stand up and say, this is illegal. You cannot do this without a vote. It's as simple as that. I'd like you to play a little bit of the music for me right now because I've about had it. I'm ready for Pauhana time. In fact, if I lived in Hawaii, I'd go for a primo on the stern of a sailboat. I think I'd set it off out into the sea and not come back.
Way, hey, stormy, walk him along, John, carry him along. Way, hey, stormy, carry him to his burying ground.
We're talking about burying the state of California and burying the state of New York and burying the federal government through these socialist Democrat losers who couldn't run a souvlaki stand on 43rd Street. They're burying you, and you have no power. You have no power whatsoever. And so, as the hour winds to a conclusion, I will close the show the way I opened the show. Qui es custodia et ipsos custodes? Who watches the watchers? Who will guard the guards? Who shall watch the watchers themselves? Well, the answer is we are no longer in a democracy where a separation of powers would have watched the watchers. We no longer have a separation of power. What we have is a dictatorship on every level. And so the people themselves must rise up and say, we've had it, and throw the bums out however you have to do it. And that may mean leaving the state of California if you work for a living, and leave the state to the degenerates and to the illegal aliens, and let them all fall into the sea after the next Loma Prieta earthquake. On that wonderful note, we'll go back to my music. Maybe we'll do, hey, can we have a little, on the way out the door, let me have Billy Bones, because Billy Bones is still my favorite, by the way. I'd like to have some Billy Bones from Skip Henderson.
Golden witches, oh, you had your last fill, Billy Bones.
Remember, do not commute the sentence of Rat Boy, Mr. Bush. Don't do it. Your legacy will be less than dirt. Instead, commute the sentence of Randy Duke Cunningham, an American Vietnam War ace, and of Campos, Ramos and Campion, the brave Border Patrol agents. Under no circumstance must you do the other.
Savage.